You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
So I live in a master planned community, and this master planned community has, it's around a golf course area, and it's a nice place. It's not probably, I shouldn't be modest. It's the nicest place in Pahrump, a little town of Pahrump where I live. There's a couple of other nice places. We have a winery in town. I believe it's still the only winery in the state. And there's a subdivision over near the winery, which is very nice. There's another place about probably 2 miles, 2 or 3 miles from where I live, known as Artesia, which is nice. But where I live, it's the nicest master plan area there is. So every morning that I get in my car and I drive to the studio, now keep in mind my show is an hour later now than it was when school was in spring, because it changed at the very beginning of summertime. And so now as I drive in, there's a bunch of little kids, like grade school age kids, that are waiting on the bus to come. And this is the way things work. There's one large parkway of sorts, and it's a four-lane divided parkway inside the interior of this master plan community. So only the people who live there really ever use a thing. And then there's in the middle, it's divided. It's got a bunch of plants and everything. It's very nice. But then the little accesses into each of the little neighborhoods have a two-lane, very short, divided roadway as well. Again, with plants and garbage in the middle. But it's very short. I mean, these things are literally they're the length of the adjoining houses that are on either side of that actual street. So it's as long as, however long a house is next door, their property, their whole property line. So what we have is a bunch of little kids that are waiting on the bus. And what we have, and keep in mind, these little neighborhoods are not that big. If you go from the entrance that meets the parkway and the little road into each little neighborhood, all the way to the furthest house inside of that entire little neighborhood, it's maybe a third of a mile. Half a mile at the deepest, longest, furthest reaches on any one of them. Well, here's the deal. How long does it take to walk half a mile? If you're pokey, it takes you 10 minutes. All right? So what we have is this beautiful, beautiful clear day today. I mean, it is gorgeous outside. It is, 75, maybe 76 degrees outside. Beautiful clear day. The same it is almost every morning this time of year, and will be through probably the end of October. And we have these massive amounts of parents that drive their children to the bus stop. Half a mile at very longest, certainly less than that in most cases. Drive their kids to the bus stop. And there's so many of them, they clog being able to get into and out of these little neighborhoods and subdivisions. Because they sit in their car and they wait for the bus to come. Now, as you go into each one of these little communities, there is a cute little park that's right there. And there's an open area to park. You could literally park your car and walk the depth of one house and across the street in the depth of one house. So it'd be like being in your backyard, walking through your house, out the front yard, and across the street is the furthest you'd have to walk to actually stand there and watch your kid get on and off the bus. No. But we have all of these just ass-white parents that are sitting there, lazy as could possibly be, teaching their kids how to be lazy. Can you imagine how much better parental time you could have walking with your child to the bus stop every day? Walking, talking, having some conversation? No. They're in their robes and slippers or whatever it may be, in their car, driving their kid, come on, let's go, talking on the cell phone or listen to the news radio, when it could be valuable parenting time. But no. It's not. Just had to get that off my chest, guys. We'll get into some actual real live stuff after the break. Stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes. You're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full-auto weapon. Bill Karnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Karnes and Two-Way Radio.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You know, I speak quite often about gun-free zones and how gun-free zones are victim-filled zones. And for the most part, when somebody goes just plain nuts, they really just, for some reason or other, somebody ends up deciding that they're going to go on a shooting rampage. Where do they go? Well, they generally go to a gun-free zone. Oftentimes, they go to places that they're familiar with. Almost all of the time they go to a place they're familiar with. Sometimes it's work, sometimes it's school, sometimes it's their favorite mall. You never know. So what we end up with is having people who go to places that they are very familiar with and they start shooting places up. Well, one gun-free zone, very large gun-free zone, is the UK, England, all of the UK, the United Kingdom. Well, here's a little gun story for you. It says 12 people have been killed and another 25 wounded. Total of 37 people after a gunman drove across Cumbria, shooting victims in several different locations before taking his own life. This is according to the UK Guardian. Police said that they were investigating 30 separate crime scenes after a taxi driver, Derek Bird, embarked upon an apparent random shooting spree. Police could do nothing but follow desperate calls for help during a three-hour manhunt that only ended when the killer took his own life. None of the victims were able to defend themselves because the government there does not allow British subjects to carry firearms for self-defense. Now, in a synopsis of Britain's gun laws, Telegraph UK admits British gun laws are among the world's toughest. Well, no duh. Semi-automatic and pump-action center-fire rifles are just plain out banned. Handguns were outlawed in Britain in 1997, and some 160,000 were surrendered to police. Even Britain's Olympic shooters fall under this ban, meaning that the pistol team, their pistol shooting team, they have to train outside of the country. So what's the result of all of this? Cumbria saw gun crime virtually doubled in 2009. Besides, the killer had jumped through all of the licensing hoops. The BBC News informs us that Cumbria police recovered a shotgun and a .22 rifle with a sight, a scope, and have since confirmed that Bird was licensed to own both weapons. The government will do everything it possibly can to help the local community and those affected. That's according to Prime Minister David Cameron as he pledged to the House of Commons. Do pledge community support and like what? We're told that Cumbria shooting officers, offers no lessons for the future. All right. Thus, crucially, they are both unpredictable and unpreventable. These sorts of shooting rampages. If somebody has a gun, there's no one out there to stop them. Now, perhaps they're not unstoppable. Let's look at this. Unless the victims are powerless to do anything but flee, hide, or be shot to death, there are no real lessons for the future in anything. Unless we arm them. Now, to his credit, Professor Eastman, some expert in the UK, recounts that after past shootings, proposals were put forth that doctors, psychiatrists, even GPs, general practitioners, should be responsible for accrediting individuals to hold a gun license based upon assessment of their mental health status. Not only was this medically misplaced, It was a proposal that was highly unlikely to prevent any such future massacre. Gun laws should be debated, but not on the back of an event, such as knee-jerk legislation. The government appears sensitive to the fact that more restrictions may not be the way to go. Oh, you think? Citing that the UK has some of the toughest firearms laws in the world, Prime Minister Cameron cautioned, quote, we shouldn't make any knee-jerk reactions to think that there's some instant legislative or regulatory answer. You can't legislate to stop a switch flickering in someone's head or for this dreadful sort of action to take place. You're absolutely right, PM. And keep in mind, this guy's actually conservative. However, you have to realize that the most conservative British conservatives, I mean, just as right-wing as you can get, we have to grade on a curve, they make Scott Brown out of Massachusetts look like a Tea Party candidate. And he's not even close. Because a Massachusetts conservative is not even close to that of, say, a Texas conservative. They don't match up. So you take a Texas conservative and a conservative out of the UK, and the guy in the UK, it looks like a pure socialist. We're grading on curves here when we use some of these terms. Now, unfortunately for law-abiding subjects of the Crown, an observable truth was articulated in a press release by the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. It says, the mass shooting in Northwest England is more proof that restrictive gun laws do not prevent criminal acts. And while the Crumbria Horror may not result in further bans, neither will it result in rollback of existing bans, and people are going to remain defenseless. Exactly my point. You cannot take guns away and call a society neither free nor safe. What happens is, you still have crime that goes on, but the government who banned the guns, what they don't have to worry about is the people uprising against them. What does that mean? You, as collateral damage in some sort of violent outbreak in your community, is completely acceptable to the government. That's what it means. Gun control is not about guns, guys. It's about control. And who controls the legislation? Well, it's all through the government. So, if you do not have gun rights, or your gun rights are being subverted, that is your government exerting control. It has nothing to do with trying to stop crime. We know that. We've proven that over and over again. Look at California. California has some really high crime rates in a lot of different areas. However, you can't have guns there. For the most part, you're just not allowed to have them. There's a lot of areas of California that are so restrictive on guns, it's ridiculous. It makes it to the point where those who want to own guns have to jump through so many hurdles, they just say, forget it. I'm not going to go through all of that. So all of these anti-gun provisions in California, and states like them, I mean, let's not leave out New Jersey, let's not leave out Illinois. Illinois is even tougher in a lot of ways. In Illinois, you have to have a firearm owner's identification card, or FOID. You actually have to go through a class and get a card, which has an expiration date, in order to just, you have to show that to even purchase a gun. So to exercise a right, the government of the state of Illinois knows who you are. And you know the locals do too. Because you actually go through them, the local police department, county sheriffs, and actually to get this firearm owner's identification card. So, that's the way things work out in Illinois. What does it do? It just helps enhance crime, that's all. Because the criminals that are out there know that the gun laws are tough. The bad guys don't abide by the gun laws. So they know that everybody else out there is potentially just an unarmed victim. Now, gun-free zones are nothing more than an open invitation for psychotics that would like to kill, rape, maim, or otherwise cause you harm. And there's an organization called Students for Concealed Carry on campus, and they're throughout the country. And they are working to try to get gun bans on campuses taken off. I'll give you an example. University of Utah. In Utah, you're allowed to carry guns on campus. You also have, then that's a private school. You also have Utah State University, which is now a state college. Now, the chancellor at Utah State came out a couple years ago and said, I am going to make an executive ruling that you're not allowed to carry guns on campus. The governor immediately picked up the phone, got the chancellor of that school on the line and said, or the president of the school, is a state school, and said, no, you will not. You will not. You don't have the authority. You don't. What you're doing is illegal. You're attempting to do is illegal. And since I am the governor, I sit higher up on the food chain than you do. If you don't roll this back immediately, because it's void, it doesn't work, and make an announcement that that's not the case, then you're out of a job. And that's all there is to it. So, Utah State University, you can pack a gun. You never hear about anything going on school grounds in Utah. It just doesn't happen. Stay tuned, guys. I'm going to read to you some of what Students for Concealed Carry on Campus have to say when we return from the break. So stay tuned. You're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Okay, so Students for Concealed Carry on Campus. Here's what they have to say. They say, so you're settling back into the swing of things on campus. You've dropped your jaw at the textbook prices, picked out your seat in the classroom for the semester, and maybe already knocked out an early quiz from an overzealous professor. If you paid attention, someone on your campus has probably already become a victim of a crime. The bustling hive of activity on campus is great, but it's also scary business. The gun-free zones are back in session, an open invitation for a psychotic killer or a rapist. Of course, no one thinks your school will be targeted, but then that's what they thought about Virginia Tech, NIU, or University of Alabama, Huntsville as well. It's time to take the next step first. It's time to get people talking, get their attention, and remind them that feeling safe is a feeling, not reality. Get some friends and go into a co-op mode, targeting more buildings for better results. It will get people talking. You don't have to urge them. Let us know how it goes. What they do is they actually, on this, this thing was online, and they had a bunch of PDFs with these, several different posters and things that you could print out and show, you know, gun-free zone means full victim zone. Remember Virginia Tech, blah, blah, blah. Let's not be the next school. Things like that. It's all good stuff. They say one more thing. As a all-volunteer organization, we're always looking for more volunteers. We need state directors, campus leaders, and, regional organizers. Those people organize and coordinate in the regional, state, and local levels. Now, these little titles make no more sense, than actually getting out there and doing things. So don't let your head get too big, guys, if you're interested. They say now it's time to take the next step and take the lead. We don't have the luxury of getting paid like our opponents do, but we have something they don't, the tide of freedom and truth. The rest of it is up to us. Are you a graphics guru? Probably blah, 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 blah. Anyhow, what they're trying to do is they're trying to spread the word that having no guns on campus is great. It's great for the people who actually would like to bring some sort of harm to you. Where is it that mass shootings happen, guys? Happens at work? Happens at some sort of educational institution? Happens in places where people gather, like in a mall? That's where mass shootings generally happen, most of them. Where the other place they happen? The fourth thing on the list when it comes to commonality is actually people in a car driving around, randomly shooting at people on the street. Their only real savior there is, It's honest to God, a drive-by shooting amongst people who are otherwise on the street. That sort of thing is a little bit more dangerous for them, being as how they're exposed to just about anybody out there who could be packing, but they're moving and they're in a vehicle, which is pretty difficult to stop, especially with something like a handgun, which is what you're going to actually be carrying when you're carrying concealed. Now, there was a case in Texas back in the 1980s, if memory serves correct, where a guy had gone into a sporting goods store in a mall, went in there, robbed the place, had a gun, comes out. As he comes out, a lot of people are running around, security's coming around, he starts hearing some sirens in the distance because it took him a little bit of time inside, grabs a woman that is a hostage, takes her, as he gets towards his vehicle, he shoots her and starts moving over towards getting into his truck. Well, there's a guy in the parking lot who had been noticing all of this as he was getting out of his car. Grab his .44, stayed out of the line of sight of this guy, and if this guy was just going to get in his truck and leave, he wasn't going to do anything. But as a bad guy shoots his hostage, this other guy, who was in the parking lot watching this whole thing, takes his gun out and shoots the hostage taker and suspected bad guy dead. Takes him out. You know, that's not a bad decision on his part. Look, if this guy's just going to commit a crime, steal stuff, fine. There's insurance, there's paperwork. He's dangerous. It might get worse later, but right now, I really don't want to get involved. You know, it's not his job. Here's the thing about a gunfight, guys. There's nothing to gain. If you get into a gunfight, the very best that you can expect, the very best you can hope for, not even expect, the very, very best you can hope for is to walk out with everything you had 5 minutes before the gunfight. You can't gain anything. You're not going to end up with extra money in your pocket, glory, fame, the bad guy's gun, knife, bat, whatever he's got. The very best you can hope for is to walk out with everything you've got and not have to spend a lot of money on some criminal defense attorney or anything such as that. The very best. So keep that in mind. So the guy in Texas did the right thing. Certainly you don't have to run up there and be the hero, be a good witness. But once he shot somebody, this guy was then a clear and present danger to him and the people in his community. All right, guys, coming up in the next segment, we have Joel Hanson, who's running for attorney general in Nevada. And this guy was at a meeting. Joel was at a meeting that I attend on Friday mornings, just this last Friday. And so wonderfully conservative, it actually gave me hope. So we're going to interview Joel Hanson for attorney general here in the state of Nevada. Take some notes, guys. If your attorney general isn't looking the same as Joel, you might want to look at another candidate. Stay tuned. We'll be right back live here on 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
All right, guys, welcome back. We have on the line, we have Joel Hanson for Attorney General State of Nevada. Joel, welcome to 2A Radio. How are you? Joel, are you on the line?
How are you?
I'm doing good, man. It was a pleasure to meet you last Friday. You came and spoke at our breakfast meeting that we have out here in Pahrump on Fridays. And I got to tell you, it was a breath of fresh air. I'm not really too intrigued by a few of the different people that have come out to Pahrump and spoken on different things. But, man, you were really right on the line. I have to applaud you for all of your very conservative ideals and really, honest to God, your understanding of the Constitution and really understanding how it actually applies rather than how someone who wants to have control wants it to apply.
Appreciate that. The Constitution has kind of been a lifelong hobby with me, and I've had an opportunity to to defend it and litigate regarding it several times as an attorney, and those are real special opportunities, and I really enjoy it. I love the Constitution, and I think we should reestablish it as our governing document rather than the way the politicians do now. They just ignore it and hope they can get away with it, which mostly they do.
That's absolutely true. And I got to tell you, another thing that I really appreciated is you're not only familiar with just the federal constitution, but you're familiar with the state constitution as well, which most people are not. It blows me away. I'm a former Las Vegas Metro police officer. And when I graduated, I stood up there and held my hand in the air and I swore to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Nevada. Neither of which at that point in time had I read from start to finish, but there I am standing there holding up my hand in order to defend it. And everyone who takes any sort of office, elected, hired, appointed, whatever, takes that very same oath. However, nothing says that they have to read it or even understand it, which I think is a real, real problem.
You know, I think I might have said this, but I went clear through kindergarten to high school, and then I went all the way through and got a Bachelor of Arts degree, and then later on I went back to law school, and I went clear through law school, and when I graduated, I had never ever been assigned to read the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. That's the way it is. We don't have an educational system that stresses that, and we should. You know, Abraham Lincoln said that it should be taught, the Constitution should be taught in the seminaries, it should be taught in the grade schools, it should be taught from the primers and in all of our colleges and so on. And he said, and it should become the political religion of America. And you can't have a religion or a political religion unless you know what you're talking about. And unfortunately, we as a people have been deprived of our heritage because we don't study our founding documents. The two most important documents in American history are never looked at or read or studied or discussed in our schools. It's a tragedy. So you have to do it on your own, which I've done. I'm sure you have too.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's interesting. Back in 1960, when JFK was elected, he took office in 61. That's when they really started this totally now spoken. Before it was just kind of subversive. Now it was spoken yet subversive. Let's start with the kids. Let's start getting the kids of today into the mindset of the leftist ideas that we've got. We can start in the schools and go through the universities, and in two or three generations, the country will be ours, with potentially never having to look back at conservative principles. And I believe that JFK's initial plan with all of that, everything that they were involved in, happened on in November of 2008 when Obama was elected. And it took two and a half generations, about three generations, I guess it would be, to actually get that done, and which is pretty quick. And it's amazing to me that you would have anybody that might be upset if we started studying the men who actually wrote these founding documents and what they meant to really to interpret the Constitution and the Federalist Papers. The only way to do that properly is to interpret them in the mindset of the time in which they were written by the men who wrote them and the experiences they had at hand when they wrote them and the meaning that they intended for them to have. Anything else is a fraudulent misinterpretation of everything that this country was founded on.
No, and that's very interesting because the Supreme Court consider themselves to be a sitting constitutional convention, and they can interpret the Constitution just any old way they want.
Yeah, that's
there's a couple of people on the court right now who believe in original intent. Scalia does, for one, and you know, I believe that he's the kind of a person that we need on the court. You need to go back to original intent, and if you don't, you're just going, you know, you're ruling by the seat of your pants by whatever you feel like on that day. And unfortunately, the liberals and the socialists have an agenda to destroy the Constitution through interpreting it improperly. You know, you can make words mean whatever you want to. It's called verbicide, and that's what they engage in all the time.
You're absolutely right.
American people have to fight back. And I'm so happy to see, actually, you know, when it comes right down to it, President Obama is probably the best thing that ever happened to the constitutionalist and conservative movement in America, because he's wakened us up. You see what's going on with the Tea Party. And by the way, they endorsed me back in, I believe it was May, and I appreciated that very much. And I've been a member of the Independent American Party my whole adult life, and the reason is because I believe that the other two parties, the major parties, have unfortunately, now not the ordinary folks, but the leadership of both of the major parties have become what they call themselves progressives, which means we're going to progress past the Constitution and set up a socialist republic. That's what they mean by that, and that's what they've been doing ever since the days of Woodrow Wilson, the first progressive socialist fascist president we had.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right on that. And I have sat here and spoken on this show, and when I've sat in for other hosts on some political shows, the exact same bastion that the Republican Party left us long ago. The only, and of course the Democrats have never really had any decent ideals. They've always just, they've had this progressive set of principles they'd like to live by. However, they don't have any foundation behind any of it, which is why when you debate a liberal, it ends up when you debunk all of their philosophies and myths and lies, they resort to name calling. And of course they love to call anybody who would otherwise debate them somehow a racist if they don't like what Obama's doing. Really. So if I have to be, I have to like what Obama's doing, otherwise I'm a racist. It's just, it's silly is what it is. It's childish mentality. And the Republican Party, you're absolutely right, left us long, long ago.
I don't care anything about Obama's race. What I care about is the fact that he's a socialist. That's what's ruining America. You know, I don't have anything against anybody in the government for any reason regarding their race. What I'm interested in is what they believe in. Who cares what their race is? America's a melting pot. That's a great thing we have in our country. And anybody of any race can get ahead here. But as President Obama shows, he doesn't stand for the traditional American values. He stands for everything. He's probably the most liberal, most radical, most socialistic president we've ever had. And the Congress, including Mr. Harry Reid, is going right along with him. And, you know, it's really actually kind of a good thing, like I said, because as I've been out campaigning for attorney general, I have found something that I've never found before, and that is I believe probably 80% of the population is angry about what's going on, and they want to do something about it. When I say, you know, I filed suit against Obamacare because it violates 60% of the Bill of Rights and it violates your right of privacy, people go crazy. They say, you're right, I'm voting for you. Or when I say, I want to stop illegal immigration, then I'm going to sue the federal government to get back all the money that Nevada's had to expend on medical care and free schooling for these illegal aliens that the feds let in the country because they didn't defend our borders. They say, oh, I've never heard anybody say that before. I say, well, that's because the politicians are afraid to say it. But I'm not afraid to say it.
You're absolutely right. And Joel, if you wouldn't mind just giving us you are so strong against Obamacare, as most Americans who have any sort of knowledge about the way things work will be. And you actually, as a private attorney, because you're not in office, not yet, but as a private attorney, took on an excellent case here in the state of Nevada, because our current attorney general, who is nothing more than a Harry Reid lackey, refused to sign on with the other 17 states, as directed by our current governor, to join into that suit. And that, our attorney general actually violated state law by not joining in under the direction of the governor, which is, you know, statutes say that she has to do that. She didn't, but you actually have gone on, and taken on a case privately. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about that?
Well, I was retained by a group called People BUS. Which had several of the plaintiffs who were people who didn't want Obamacare because they're not insured, and they don't want to have insurance for various reasons. They don't want it for religious reasons. They don't want it for medical reasons. They don't want it for constitutional reasons. Or they just don't want it because they want their self-insured through their business or something. They don't want to have insurance. So all of these plaintiffs are uninsured people who say, I don't want to be forced to buy medical care, and I don't think the federal government's got the right to force me to do that for these various reasons. It depends on the plaintiff. So I looked at the Obamacare, me and my staff read through it, and we found that it violates 60% of the Bill of Rights. It violates the right of privacy. It violates the 13th Amendment against involuntary servitude, as well as the prohibition against a capitation or head tax, and it violates the Commerce Clause. Now, the states, in their suits, they basically alleged a violation of the Commerce Clause and the 10th Amendment, which is all fine and good. But my lawsuit that we developed, I should say our lawsuit, it's not my lawsuit, but anyway, that we developed is, we're talking about individual rights. It violates your freedom of religion. The Catholics back in Wisconsin, a Catholic group sued because they said, this forces us to support abortion, and it's against our religion to support abortion. And it's also actually an establishment of the religion, the state religion of socialism. And they don't have the right to establish a state religion of socialism. That's against the Establishment Clause. And then it violates the unlawful search and seizure provision in the Fourth Amendment because they're going to get all your medical records without your consent. It violates the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment because they're going to fine you with no due process of law whatsoever if you don't get it. They're just going to send you notice, hey, okay, you owe X amount of dollars because you didn't get any insurance, and it's going to keep getting larger and larger until you're either forced into it or I guess they'll throw you in jail, one of the two.
Yeah, they're going to send somebody with guns eventually.
That's one thing I have got to look up. I don't think there's criminal penalties yet, but, you know, there will be eventually. And it violates the Ninth Amendment, which is one of my favorite amendments because the Founding Fathers said, you know what? We can't think of all the violations of our rights, which might occur someday in the future, and we can't think of all our rights. So just in case we forgot to list any, we're keeping those too, and you can't violate them. That's what the Ninth Amendment basically says. And, of course, they never anticipated that there'd be somebody named Obama in the federal government who would force us to buy health insurance. So that's one of the rights that they didn't think of. You don't have the right. You don't have the power to take away our right not to have health insurance.
You're absolutely right.
They're a visionary man. And then the 10th Amendment says, you know, all the powers that weren't delegated to the federal government on the Constitution are reserved to the states or to the people. So we have the right not to have them violate the Commerce Clause and force us to buy insurance so that they can regulate us.
Yeah.
We have all those rights. And then it violates the right to privacy, which the Supreme Court announced in the case of Roe versus Wade, which is the abortion case. And the liberals are so enamored with that case, they're going out of their minds because I'm using that right of privacy to say, okay, that's fine. If that's your law, then we'll apply it to Obamacare. And Obamacare violates your right to privacy because the federal government is eventually going to know everything about your health care, and you're forced to buy insurance. And so in order to get that, you have to, you know, tell the insurance company all about your, you know, whether you had a wart on your left leg when you were 7 or whatever it might be, you know, sexual problems, female problems, you know, private stuff, psychological problems, all that stuff's going to come out, and the government eventually is going to find it all out. So it's a total violation of your right to privacy. Right to privacy says you have the right to control your own body, and the government doesn't have the right to tell you what to do with your own body. Now, that applied to a woman's right, you know, of abortion. They said she had under that case, and now I'm saying, well, fine, then it applies to my right to control my own body. I don't want your health care.
Yeah, what if somebody's into holistic medicine? If someone's into anything such as holistic medicine or natural remedies, that would pretty much violate or alienate that. Another thing that we all fear when it comes to guns is they will come out with, they've already started using the things about how guns are a national health crisis. So if you own a gun or if you're going to have guns or ammunition and you keep it into anything other than disassembled and unusable, you're going to have much higher premiums, or they might even prevent you from having this mandatory insurance if you don't play the way that they tell you that you need to play. Joel, hold on the line. We're about to head into a break. We're going to come back and do our final segment. I want to sum a few things up with you, if you don't mind. And, guys, everybody, stay tuned. There is more to come. We're going to have Joel Hansen on here just to finish up. And we'll be back after the upcoming break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Bill Carnes with guest Joel Hansen right here live on 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on, we'll take you on. Headstrong to take on.
And welcome back. Guys, we have Joel Hansen, who is the Independent American Party's candidate for Attorney General for the state of Nevada. Very conservative guy who's very straightforward thinking. Joel, welcome back to the show. And we're just coming up towards the end of the show. We got about 2.5 minutes or so, and I'm going to turn it over to you to finish up with anything else that you really want to get out there.
Qualifications for the job. I've been in Nevada my whole life. I've lived at both ends of the state. I've traveled all around the state. I know Nevada very well, and I love it here, and I want to be the Attorney General. I'm the most experienced candidate in the race. I've got 32 years experience. That's more than both of the other candidates combined. I've been in numerous jury trials. I've been before the Nevada Supreme Court umpteen times, and I've been a very successful attorney, so... If you want a successful and experienced and a tough attorney general, I'm your man. You know, I had an opponent of mine, a colleague of mine who we finished a case and I won the case, and he said openly in the press, he said, Joel Hansen is the toughest attorney I ever faced. In fact, people call me the bulldog. So if you want a tough, experienced, and successful attorney as your attorney general, then you should vote for Joel Hansen. In November, and I'm also going to. I think we should have an Arizona style immigration law in Nevada, and I'll defend it. And I'll also counterclaim against against Washington for all the money Nevada's had to expend to provide free medical care and free schools to the illegal aliens on account of Washington's failure to enforce to protect our borders. And also, as Attorney General, I'm going to file suit against the big Wall Street firms like the Ohio Attorney General did, and he recovered $1 billion from AIG for the investors in Ohio. That's something we need in Nevada. And I'll defend the right to keep and bear arms because I'm very strong on that. I listened to your talk about that. I agree with every word you said. It was great.
Joel, tell us where we can donate to your campaign. Tell us where we can donate to your campaign.
www.votejoelhansen.com. There's a place where you can go and donate and volunteer to help.
And that's Joel, H-A-N, www.votejoelhansen.com to either help out with donations or to actually hit the street and help walk out and otherwise support your campaign. Joel, thanks so much for being a guest today.
Appreciate you for having me on, Bill, and best wishes to you.
Same to you. Thanks a bunch. Guys, thanks so much for staying tuned in today. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a good afternoon.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2WayRadio.com. I will not.